Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now. Did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
This episode is brought to you by our newest Patreon members, Melanie Williams and Jessica Vargas. Give them a round of applause because they rock. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all. I could not do this without you. And I am so grateful to all of you for making this show a possibility. You really rock, like you really do. Liam.
Hi.
Hi. Liam is here to help me introduce the interview that's coming up, which is a beautiful interview. And it's, I can't wait for y'all to hear it. But Liam, can you... Liam is from season 9, episode 21. Can you give everybody just kind of like an overview of who you are and why you came and where you are? You know, just give me your elevator pitch.
Sure. So I am Liam Colley. I use he or they pronouns. I'm a licensed midwife and fertility specialist. Many years ago, I started being drawn to working with birthing families, and by the time I came out, I was like, no, I want to serve queer and trans folks specifically. I want to serve my own community. Mm-hmm. And our needs for care start before we conceive. I just take what I know about how the human body works. And I've built a practice that's focused on helping people get pregnant with frozen sperm. So anyway, that's what I do. I help people get pregnant as a midwife. I do in-home insemination. But I also teach midwives how to do this work. I teach classes and lead support groups among my clientele. because I want people to be able to access community. I think we're really not supposed to become new parents in a vacuum all alone. I think we're supposed to have contact with our peers and with our elders. And mm-hmm. so that's what I create. Yeah. And I'm also an author and a speaker. And so I'm way too busy. But I'm going to keep doing that until one or more of my children pop out grandbabies. And then are going to be on
grandbaby dad. Okay. So, like, when we talked to you, Liam, we got your whole story of you were living that straight life and you popped out a bunch of kids. How many kids do you have?
No, I was living that straight life, and through, you know, adolescence, high school, college, and then when I graduated from college, I was pregnant on accident.
Right.
So I acquired bonus children. Mm-hmm. Later, I came out when my daughter was like 2, and then by the time she was 10, I partnered with my ex and got 3 more bonus children.
But you had also recently started your transition.
Yeah. I had chest surgery, eye top surgery, and that's been amazing.
Congrats.
My voice has dropped. So now when I talk to people that I haven't spoken to in a while, they're like, whoa, what? What? Yeah.
It'd be interesting to hear both your episode from before and now your voice. Yeah.
It's really like, it's just what I've always wondered. I've always wondered what would my body be like if I had been born a guy, because I've wanted to be a guy since I was a tiny little kid.
Wow.
And my body had other ideas and I went with that. So once menopause hit, I was like, no, estrogen is not the way. So anyway, it's in a fantastic way to not go through menopause.
That's one way to go about it, right? All you non-queer folks out there, this might be a good route for you.
My book is Queer Conception, The Complete Fertility Guide for Queer and Trans Parents to Be. And the book has brought all these amazing opportunities to do advocacy work. I'm now sitting on a work group around advocating for families who want to conceive with donor conception. There's been a lot of backlash from a vocal minority of donor conceived people who are real upset about it. But guess what? Our kids are wanted. And that makes a huge difference. Yeah. And when you tell a kid from the time they're very young that they were donor conceived, it's just part of their reality. It's not a big secret.
From what I can tell with the 200 plus families I have interviewed, our kids are okay so far. Mm-hmm. At least they're not okay because of the gay thing, right?
Right.
Because the donor conceived thing, I think.
Or the donor conceived thing.
Right. Right. Yeah. So,
And the types of things that are being advocated for right now legally are the kinds of things that queer families started asking for from the very beginning, like donor identity release when the child turns 18.
Mm-hmm. Mandate.
And family limits, like a limit to how many families can be conceived with a given donor. So it's basically like queer families who have made donor conception, you know, advocated for changes to make things better and better for our families. And then this community that seems to have no clue and is advocating for the things we've done many years ago and wanting to put it into law.
Right.
And while, laws can be protective, this is a really shaky time to be putting forth legislation around reproductive rights.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that they're grasping an opportunity at a time that could be really, really dangerous, and it makes me super uncomfortable.
Ooh, that's a good point you bring up, Liam. Yeah.
I've also been able to sit on a panel working on national guidelines through the Office of Population Affairs around reproductive and family building care.
So changes are slowly being made. Because that's all I keep saying. All I do is just tell the stories, and I keep saying on the show, we need to redo this system. This is fucked up. But you're doing the actual work, so thank you for that.
Yeah. How could I not?
I'm just talking and telling the stories. No, I know. But it's funny. You bring up something I wanted to talk about because of the landscape for queer folks right now and trans folks in particular right now politically. My kids don't let me watch TV when they're in the house, obviously, but they were both doing something and I randomly was like, ooh, I'm going to turn the news on. It was like a Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find any new because I don't have cable or whatever. So I put it on CBS and it was like really down, terrible stories. And then I saw that Fox News was one of the ones next to me. And I said, let me just see what they're saying on Fox. I know, glutton for punishment. I know. But I was like, I just want to see what they have to say. They were doing a story on real life exorcisms and they had a priest come in to talk about how these are real and there are demons inside people and all this stuff.
Okay.
And bear with me here. There is a point to it. Mm-hmm. And they kept showing scenes of the literal exorcist movie. They kept showing this is on daytime TV, showing scenes of that girl, the girl's face turning around, like scary shit. And they kept going back to these scenes. My kid was sitting next to me on the couch and I'm like, oh my God, I have to change the channel. This is scary. And then I got me thinking about how they're so in an uproar about these drag shows and drag queens and drag kings who are corrupting our child's minds. But they're on the fucking TV showing the goddamn Exorcist. Excuse my language, but like, what the fuck? Are you really trying to protect children? Because this is daytime TV right here. I don't want my five-year-old seeing that scene. And they can't show. So anyway, that was my long way of saying Fox News sucks. But okay, let's introduce the interview that's coming in. And I wanted you for this intro because you work to help folks get pregnant. And Sally Ann and Rebecca, they're lesbian ladies. They had a very long fertility journey. And in their words, it doesn't have a happy fucking ending. And it doesn't. But like, here's the thing. And you know firsthand, every child is a freaking miracle, right? No matter how they come to you, which in our community, they come in many, many, many ways. And sometimes, even when we switch courses and we try different routes, things just don't work out for us. We don't always get a baby in the end, not to give anything away. But in this episode, we talk IUI, we talk IVF, we talk adoption, we talk fostering. And I'm wondering, do you have any, like, did you have any, like, hard pregnancy journeys with any of your clients, or has it been pretty smooth for you?
Oh, gosh, no, everything happens. And it's really hard when what you want is to be able to do this with your body. You want this embodied experience of carrying a baby. Some people really want the experience of giving birth. But and certainly it is the most sort of legally protective for a person to give birth with their own body. Nobody is going to question your status as a parent that way.
Right.
But it isn't easy for everybody.
Right.
People do have all kinds of things happen.
You know, and Sally Ann and Rebecca, they had a really long road and they did change courses and it doesn't end out. It like doesn't have a happy fucking ending. Like that's all I'm going to say because I don't want to give too much away. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was really important and they really wanted to share their story to offer, you know, help to those who are maybe in a struggle and maybe contemplating a difficult decision. Like, you know, do we give up? Do we find healing in other ways? Do we change? You know what I mean? So this story is for those, for all of us to hear, but also for those who are in that place. And I was in that place. It didn't take me as long as it took them. And, you know, and I have a baby. I got a baby in the end, but like I was in that place. I needed to hear, okay, all right, what does it look like if this doesn't work out? That is healing, right? To hear how other folks get through this trauma and come out on the other side of it. And so that's why story is so important, I think.
Yeah, and you know why that aspect is so important? Because what makes us resilient going through hard things is honesty, being honest with ourselves, care providers being honest with us, agency. Being able to make the choices that are actually best for us as individuals, and connection with other people who have been through it. So that's why listening to somebody else's story can be so powerful, because we feel that connection. We don't feel so alone in it. And our hearts need that. We need each other. Yeah. And I think it's part of what makes our community so strong. I think we have all the tools that we need as queer people to be able to weather the process emotionally as long as we don't let ourselves get isolated. Right. If all you're doing is listening to a podcast, awesome.
Yeah.
You're getting some support and keep reaching out because there are live real people
so
who help
much.
You.
Yeah. And to heal from disappointment, right? This is kind of a story about healing from the tremendous disappointment of it not working out.
I want to say along those lines, there's a resource that I want people to know about. It's a website called LGBTQReproductiveLoss.org.
Okay.
Krista Craven is an author. She wrote a book called LGBTQ Reproductive Loss, but she also created a website for families. And she includes folks who weren't able to, quote, achieve pregnancy or who experienced the loss of becoming parents through trying to, you know, create a baby through pregnancy and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And that's loss too.
Oh, it's huge loss.
So, so I want folks to know about that and to check it out. I'm so psyched that this episode is coming out on April 3rd because all of our offerings at Maya happen in sort of 3-month chunks. And that's, you can find it all at mayamidwifery.com.
I will link it in the notes. The show notes. And I hope you enjoy the interview. And Liam, it has been just a pleasure reconnecting. I'm so glad you came back. And hopefully this happens again.
Thanks so much for having me, Jamie.
Oh,
so good to see you again.
So good. All right. Helen and Beulah, please roll that tape. Thank you, ladies. Thank you.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Wait, Helen, stop. Before you roll that tape, I need to mention one thing. I have to mention Patreon. If you all like this show and you want to keep hearing these super important LGBTQIA+ family stories, you can help. You can join my Patreon community. I've got various tiers on the page starting at just $2 a month. You're going to do a good thing and you're going to get bonus content like videos of most episodes dropped a day early, crazy behind the scenes shenanigans of yours truly trying to get it together. And anything else I can think of to keep you all entertained and engaged. You're just going to head to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast to join. And a huge, 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 huge thank you to all you Patreons who are already supporting this show. It means the world to me. I couldn't do it without you. Thank you so much. Okay. All right. Helen and Beulah, please roll that tape.
The Queer Family Podcast.
Hi, Rebecca and Sally Ann.
Hi, Jamie.
Hi.
Great to be here.
Oh, it's so wonderful to have you here on the Zoom. You have to give us your elevator pitch of who you are, because if I try to do it, I'm just going to butcher it. And I feel like the two of you are going to do it so much better than I could ever possibly do it. So I'm going to get my little timer here. Don't be scared. I will never cut you off. You can go over. It can bleed into the episode, whatever it is. But the goal is to try to get it under 30 seconds just for fun. For shits and giggles, as we say.
Cool.
All right.
Like that.
Okay. You know who's going. You know who's going first.
Yep. I'm ready.
Okay. I'm going to count you in. On your mark.
All right.
Get set. Go.
Okay. I'm Rebecca, and this is Sally Ann.
Hello.
Majoya. And we have written a book called Uncertain Fruit, Infertility, Loss, and Love. And it's about our journey through the throes of infertility, trying adoption through foster care, through private adoption, through various things. And it doesn't have a fucking happy ending. If you're about that.
That was actually the best ending to an elevator pitch I think I've ever heard. I mean, despite the fact that it's sad, it doesn't have a happy fucking ending. And that's, I mean, that's one of the main reasons. Well, you reached out to me and I heard your story and I was like, oh, well, shit, yes, we need to discuss this, because this is a reality for many folks out there. It doesn't always have a happy fucking ending, right? And
yes.
And this
a
story,
lot of times.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And and the two of you have really been through a journey. I mean, it took me 2.5 years to get pregnant with our second, my son. And that felt like forever. And this podcast came because of that struggle. So I know the struggle. I know what it feels like. I know what it feels like to be searching everywhere for stories like yours. I know what it feels like to see, you know, people having babies out there and it's not working for you. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of our listeners know that struggle and might be in the throes of it right now. So
definitely.
This is a really important story. I'm so glad the two of you have come on.
Yeah. Especially when you're trying. Doesn't it seem like half the population is pregnant?
Always. Yes, always. And everybody's celebrating babies. There are babies everywhere.
And you're thrilled for them. Yes. Like, you're not thrilled for them, but it just seems so in your face.
It's still, it's hard. It's hard. You know, you can't, it's just because you're thrilled doesn't negate from the fact that you're hurting because it's still not freaking working for you. So before we get into your whole fertility journey, because we're going to spend the majority of this talking about that and the book that came from it, can we talk about the two of you and where you met and your kind of backstory? I'd love to. And that's in the book too a little bit, which is kind of exciting. Yes. So I like how you kind of, here I go. I just told y'all at home, I just told them I'm going to pretend like I haven't read the book. And here I am like, oh, I love how you interweave like your backstory into each chapter. So it's interwoven and it's done very well. So tell us, how'd you meet? What's your story?
Mm-hmm. So it was about 21 years ago, and I was working in a holistic health store at the time called Peace of Mind.
Of course.
And
Sobermont. Is that like Sobermont?
So lesbian. It was. Sobermont.
It was so lesbian.
You had your plaid shirt on. You had your snow boots. Okay, go ahead.
You got it. Mm-hmm. And she was absolutely adorable. I felt like I had known her forever. It was like we've both talked about this. It was like love at first sight for both of us. And
I never believed in that. I never believed in that love at first sight stuff. But,
yes.
And I mean, it was love at first sight. And then we've done a shit ton of work on a relationship too. Yes, so it's like, it all goes together. Like, even though it's love at first sight, it doesn't mean like it's perfect and easy and whatever.
No, it's not. You know. It was a fun little first date because she invited me. She tried to play it really cool when she asked me out. So she decided to invite me to a dinner date with a friend of hers who she was celebrating the birthday of the friend, and the friend's husband was coming with her. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't quite sure. I'm like, is this a date or is this just like, hey, I want to get to know you better kind of thing? But I'm hoping it's a date. And then after we finished having our dinner together, she said, do you want to join me for some coffee afterwards? And I have some friends who are having a birthday party for their dog. The dog is turning 2 years old.
Wow.
And somehow of course, it was that combination of the coffee and the dog party. I was like,
This is the like lesbian Flynn. For me. That's what it is.
Yes.
So Rebecca, you were a single mother at the time. You had two children. And can you tell us a little bit about that story? How did your children come to you and how did you become a single mother? What happened there?
I was in a heterosexual marriage before. Mm-hmm. I was raised very right-wing fundamentalists, born again. You're going to go to hell if you're in a same-sex relationship.
Oh.
And so I, even though I knew.
In the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. Bible Belt. So I knew I was into women.
Yeah.
I even told my ex that before we got married. And he was like, it's okay. It was a fluke. You know, you're going to be, God and I can help you through this kind of thing. So I was in that marriage for 10 years and had two babies during that time. So when I left that marriage, they were 5 and 3. When I met Sally Ann, they were 6 and 8.
A little older, almost older. Around that age.
So it had been a journey in and of itself because it was during the process of leaving that relationship. It's severe postpartum depression after the second one. I went into therapy and really came to the place where this marriage isn't healthy for a myriad of reasons, one of which I really, and I'm happy because this is not for me in any way, shape, or form. And so came out in like my early 30s, finally came to peace with, I'm into women. I'm not going to burn in hell. Life is going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And left that marriage. So,
That's heavy. I'm not a professional in any way, and this is just me talking out of my ass, really. But like, I wonder if the postpartum, like, is there a connection between that postpartum, the depression you went through, and not living your truth? You know, because
absolutely,
yeah, right? There must be. But go check with a professional, and you know, don't take my word for it. But it sounds like there's probably a connection there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think like what we learned through our journey is one grief touches like all the grief in your life. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely.
It like when you're
writing about it, you realize you start writing pieces from all different parts of your life that you maybe never even dealt with before.
Right. Postpartum is such grief. Mm-hmm. And so like it took me back to the grief of, I was suicidal as a teenager and no one ever knew. I never talked to anybody. I did one very lame attempt.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad it was a lame attempt, and I'm glad you're still here.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. And it was all around just not fitting in and feeling like I didn't understand the world I was in. Like, why have all my friends become boy crazy and I'm not? Mm-hmm. Why are they girly girls in love pantyhose and I hate those fucking things? Yeah. And why, so it kind of, I think giving birth and all of that kind of took me also to that space of like, I'm not feminine. Mm. How can I be a mother? You know, because we like we attach all of that shit to nurturing and parenting. And
yeah. And it doesn't have to be, right? It doesn't have to be.
No.
But it also just goes to show you can't bury parts of yourself. They're going to come out. You can't bury it. We can't bury parts of ourselves. God, if only the whole world would catch on to that. You can't change people's truths. It's not going to happen.
No.
Okay. Well, okay. So let's move on from there. So you come out, you end your marriage, you're a single mom now, and you're living as a gay woman for the first time ever. Mm-hmm. And then like a year later, you meet the love of your life. Was it like a year, 2 years?
It was about 3 years. About three years later.
I'm making numbers up here. Yeah. That's what I do.
Fine. Make sure. Fine. Roll with it.
So, okay, great. So, mm-hmm. and you know, I should ask, Sally Ann, had you been living as a queer woman for a long time, or was this new for you?
It wasn't a long time that I was out, but I had been in a relationship prior to the one with Rebecca that also actually had children in it. Oh. Which kind of colored the ease or the transition of getting into the relationship with Rebecca, because I was really mindful of getting into a relationship that involved children. And
mindful. You're scared of shit.
I was scared of shit, but I was mindful of like, the children in it. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Okay, let's dive in now. So we know your backstory. We know you're madly in love. We know you're doing it all right. And so where does talk of baby making come in?
So that was fairly early on in the relationship, right? A few years in that I was really, you know, you had always said, you've done the wedding, you've had children. So whatever you want to do, you know, she really left it up to me.
I didn't want to have her miss out on that stuff.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I didn't feel the deep urge to have more. Right. I'd done the baby thing. Mm-hmm. But doing with her, I mean, that would be so different.
Yeah,
so right. I was all on board.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So then I did write about some of this. You know, I went to the doctors. I was diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome, which was an automatic consideration of infertility. So the doctor was like, I'm going to need to refer you to a specialist. This was also around the time Rebecca had a emergency hysterectomy.
Right.
So there was no question about her being able to carry a child if we were going to have one.
And Rebecca, why had you had the emergency hysterectomy?
I had started menopause early, like 38. I started having hot flashes. And I developed very fibroids, basically. Mm-hmm. It was to the extent that I looked and felt 3 months pregnant.
Wow.
It was that hard and big. And so, and I was severely anemic. Mm. So they said, this has got to go, because you're just going to keep, I would bleed constantly, like periods that lasted 3 weeks, that was super plus the whole time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we got to get this out of here because it's just going to continue.
So Rebecca, you have lost your uterus.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have PCOS as well, Sally Ann. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. you're going to need fertility help. No, well, right. we're going to need fertility help no matter what. Because we're missing a very yes. essential piece in baby making. But you yes. also know that it might take extra work to get yeah. pregnant.
Yeah.
So what exactly. happens?
So I started going through the fertility processes. In addition to that, I also started trying to use holistic medicine to support it. And we really did the up and down roller coaster of fertility drugs, IUI, trying to get pregnant using donor sperm.
She was so committed. Mm-hmm. I mean, she did weekly acupuncture mm-hmm. for over a year. Mm-hmm. She did changed her diet like mm-hmm. completely. No mm-hmm. refined sugar, no gluten. I mean, was really dedicated.
You were committed
to the process.
Yeah. Very committed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For about 8 years, I was committed. Oh, and maybe God. By then I should have been committed. But
I'm kidding. You want that, you know.
And there's, oh, yes.
And you'll go to the ends of the earth.
Yeah, and stuff yes. delays it. Yeah, like she would have a polyp. Mm-hmm. Then you've got to wait 6 weeks for the surgery, then mm-hmm. your procedure. Then you've got to wait. So like these things kept making it take longer.
Mm-hmm. And did you stick with IUI for each try throughout the 8 years, or was there IVF in there?
Yeah, we were considering IVF, but then there was just other health concerns at the time. So that was really around the time that we decided we would start thinking about adoption.
And through all this time, you were buying donor sperm from like a sperm bank?
Yes.
So 8 years of donor sperm. And that adds up. So you got the fertility treatments adding up. Did insurance pay for?
Thank goodness insurance covered a lot of the fertility treatment process. So that was a boost.
Oddly, because she was diagnosed with
yes. PCOS,
then she was. Otherwise, we have,
otherwise,
you have to try.
No.
You have to
for
try.
Six
yeah.
months
it's
or whatever.
Inherently
yeah. Which I had been trying.
Yeah.
Right.
We try all the time. Nothing comes of it.
Yeah. What was this? Yeah.
listen, if it was based on the quality of the sex we have, we'd have lots of babies.
Right?
Let's be real.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
So, babies everywhere.
Yeah, there'd be just gay babies everywhere. not gay themselves, because we're going to wait for them to find out themselves.
Exactly. But you know what I mean. Exactly. Yeah.
We're not judging anyone. So, God, 8 years of going back. And did you have to pick, switch donors
throughout yes.
the, because they yeah. retire
several
them.
Times. Right. Exactly.
8 years mm-hmm. of going back to the drawing board, going through the fertility drugs. You did injections, I'm assuming, as well as mm-hmm. oral
yes.
pills.
Right.
So mm-hmm. A whole long yeah. journey. And Rebecca, you were supporting her through this entire time. There's actually a really sweet part in the book where, Rebecca, you talk about, you know, watching Sally Ann go through it and wishing you could help. And, you know, you can't even offer a uterus to yeah. hold a baby in, and the frustration and the sadness that you felt with that.
Yeah. You mm-hmm. just feel so powerless mm-hmm. because I got nothing to give you, nothing yeah. to, I can hold your hand through every insemination. I can, mm-hmm. Well, we had a friend give her the injections because I would have passed out. problem. But doing everything you can, but you can't give anything that feels big, mm-hmm. you know, or real. Like right. if I could have said, we'll get harvest your eggs, I'll carry the baby, you know, something real. It just, it feels very powerless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so how do you get to the next place in your journey, or like what happens?
So next was foster care, right?
Didn't we? Yeah, we enrolled in the foster care program.
Right, the training.
And we were thinking about that as a potential for adoption of infants.
Mm-hmm. Were you still, trying to get pregnant? Was this just kind of like a backup thing? Or how did you get to this decision that we're going to stop this?
Yeah, I think, no, we decided to stop, especially because we knew that IVF was not going to be an option at that point. So that was really when we were like, okay, this is off the table. We've got to accept this is off the table now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are we going to do? Where do we want to go with this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are we going to continue mm-hmm. trying to add to our family?
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do?
I think throughout the process, there's constant checking in, you know, of all the years together. We were regularly checking back and forth with each other. Do you still want to do this? I mean, it was, you know, the roller coaster ride.
I'm 11 years older.
Yes.
Right. So, there is an age difference.
Yeah. Yes.
She was really conscious of that and saying.
When you started the fertility treatment, Sally Ann, how old were you?
30.
30.
That's about like 30.
A great age to start. And
yes.
And Rebecca, you were 41.
41. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is not that old.
Plenty young.
Yeah. Plenty young. Now we're 8 years later. That's tough mm-hmm. to stop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I could have stopped. I only did it for 2.5 years. I don't know if I would have been able to stop at that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It was very tough.
Yeah.
Very tough. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the conversation early on. She was like, well, how old you would be a cutoff? And I said, probably 50. You know, I mean, but that was 9 years. So it looked like forever. Like, of course we'll have a baby before then.
Right, right. Especially because we're using science, right? We're using science. It's going to work. Obviously, science is going to work.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. But we checked in a lot with each other.
Mm-hmm. And then what we found out is that even with the foster care, we were looking at, you know, the goal of that is to reconcile with the family of origin. And we, in addition to, as we tell a story within the book about one of our, these potential adoptions we thought we might have through foster care, through somebody we know, but mm-hmm. we ran into several other people who had done something similar and ended up having to return the child to some family member mm-hmm. of origin after 9 months, 18 months. And we thought, no, we don't want to take that chance. Like, to you know.
I've interviewed a good amount of folks who have gone this route and have returned children to their birth parents or to their birth families. And it's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Yeah. I mean, that's the mm-hmm. goal. And that's what you have to go in understanding.
Totally.
So it's not for everyone. Right.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. And we wanted to come out with a baby at the end. Right. I mean, that's what we'd been working for.
Right.
So we went, so we ended up telling them, okay, well, I think we were still like, okay with foster care.
Mm-hmm.
If they thought it was a situation where it was pretty, pretty confident that it might lead to adoption.
Right.
So that door was still open.
Mm-hmm.
We were working with also with
a private adoption agency in Vermont.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That opened it up. If you adopt through foster care through another state,
mm-hmm.
there's a specific adoption agency in Vermont you have to use mm-hmm. to do that process.
Okay.
So because sometimes there are babies that are relinquished very quickly mm-hmm. after birth mm-hmm. in other states. And so we thought that would open it up
mm-hmm.
more broadly.
Mm-hmm.
And because if parents go ahead and just sign off all rights
right
after the baby's born into mm-hmm. foster care, that's different. And we were looking into private adoption, but it was so expensive for us. I mean, I'm in social work. Sally Ann was doing.
I was working in
higher ed.
Higher ed. Yeah, exactly. At mm-hmm. the time. I'm mm-hmm. a speech language pathology now, but yeah.
Yes. And we had two kids that one had gone to college and mm-hmm. we didn't have like an extra $50,000 in the bank.
Yeah. Just is that how much it would cost? That's I'm wondering for private adoption. Is that how much you're looking at like $50,000?
We were looking at the agency that we were working with in Vermont. It was about close to $30,000 at that point, right?
Would be the low end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there are other private agencies that we, you know, looked into that there was no way we could do it because it was $45,000 and up to start
and
with.
These are the things. I mean, these are the things that our families mm-hmm. go through and the decisions we
exactly.
face. You already spent thousands of dollars on sperm. You already did that.
Right.
8 years worth.
Yeah. Right.
And now here we are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now I got to find some money to try this mm-hmm. route. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then where do you go? So what happens? I don't mean like, I'm not trying to push you.
No.
Then someone that we knew that worked in the education system contacted us kind of out of the blue, said, I've got this teenager that we're working with and she's less than a month away from giving birth and is saying to her social workers at the school that she's just going to leave this baby at the hospital. She doesn't want to have this baby. She is not connected to the father of the baby. She's really doesn't want to do this. And would you like to meet with her? she's willing to meet with you. We're like, okay.
And that begins really our story, and the thread of the story of Uncertain through him.
Yeah, that's where the story starts. It was it less than 2 weeks later?
It was a whirlwind.
She's giving like birth. A real right. So meet with her several whirlwind. Times.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's quite so a whirlwind. you met with her like the next day, mm-hmm. and then you were meeting her mother and. Right. So,
yeah, yep. every day we were meeting. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So at the hospital, you know, she let us watch her give birth. Uh-huh. Sally Ann had skin to skin contact immediately when the baby was born. It was taken into a separate room with Sally. It was all prepped. So Sally Ann could do skin to skin contact with the baby.
So it was like going forward. You hired lawyers.
Yeah.
You.
Oh, yeah.
Everything was like. Basically, like you were tying it up with a bow. We were here. You were at a hospital. They had given you your own special room, like they do. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. You get the.
She had a lawyer.
Skin.
We had a lawyer.
Right.
We're paying for both of them, of course.
She right. Them. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You went through all of the channels to get to the place where you get to take this baby home.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we did. We did take the baby home.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
There were. As we talked about in the book, there were some other factors that were at play. And ultimately, she decided that she wanted to reclaim the baby.
It's a precarious place because you have physical custody, but you don't have legal custody.
And in Vermont, how long does the birth parent have to decide they want to reclaim their rights?
I believe it still is ultimately about 30 days. Mm-hmm. Okay. Some states are longer. I know at one point Colorado was like 6 months. Other states, it's like 48 hours. Mm-hmm. I think Florida. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have the baby, and then how long is it before you hear this news?
But we had him 10 days.
10 days from the day he was born. So we had to give him up. So we had him in the hospital. We were in the hospital with him for almost 4 days. Mm-hmm. And then
we brought him home, introduced him to. Family, a lot of the visiting. Family, friends, you know, all of the excitement.
Yeah.
It really, I mean, in hindsight, you know, we can see where there were a lot of pieces in place that.
Red flags.
Were red flags,
what,
yeah.
What were some of the red flags, if you don't mind?
Sure. Her age, for one thing, is actually, we found out, a red flag, especially because she was not, she was about 17. She was. Not somebody who had a lot of goals for her future.
Mm-hmm. Plans, no concrete plans for her future.
Yes. She had a mother who was very invested in her keeping the baby, even though she would give lip service to the fact that she was supporting her daughter. Mm-hmm. So much so that the mother was intervening at the hospital and telling the nurses that, you know, she was going to, basically, she thought it was going to go one way and it was going to go a different way than she thought.
And saying to the daughter, to her daughter, you know, if you don't come home with the baby, don't come home.
Was, you know, that would have been November in Vermont. I mean,
it's cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's those are, and she didn't want to meet us at the school.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to meet me somewhere
when
else.
When you first met the birth mother.
When we first met.
The and mom. And that she probably should have been a red flag.
Also, you know? She didn't like we offered to have her work with the adoption agency, get some counseling from the adoption agency that we'd been working with. She didn't want to do that. And these are just a lot of things that in hindsight and from what we learned and through research and
after the fact,
other adoption agencies we talked to, these were some warning signs.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So now you have the baby. And then you get a call? Like, how does this work?
Well, we're still in contact with the lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we didn't have each other's, like, we didn't have the birth mom's phone number. She didn't have ours. We were going through the lawyer.
We got our track phone.
That's right. We had the track phone.
Yeah. We got our track phone.
I think by the time she had, after she gave birth, did she still have the track phone? Mm-hmm. Seems like she had run out of minutes.
And
whatever,
you gave her a track phone because she didn't have a phone anymore, right? Her phone like went out of service.
Like her father was paying for it and wasn't going to be paying for it any longer, something like that.
And she was so close to giving birth and was couch surfing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So we didn't want her to not be able to contact the hospital even if she
I want to clarify something, because you do in the book, you talk a lot about how you had these very maternal feelings towards her as well, and you really wanted to make sure that she was taken care of, and you kind of thought of her like one of your children as well. And so you're doing everything in your power to make sure she's taken care of and is okay with this decision.
Yes.
And at the hospital, we've been asked the social worker from the hospital, so does she have access to housing? Does she have access to food stamps? All of these things, just because we're taking the baby. We know in Vermont, a new mother usually has access to all. And they're like, yes, she will still have access to all of this. I said, does she? Can you explain it? Make sure she understands so that she's not, we still don't want her in the cold, for heaven's sakes.
And we also didn't want her to, you know, we were concerned about things like postpartum too for her.
Definitely.
You know, no matter what she thought she, you know, was feeling about giving up this baby at that time. And, you know, she really was very determined throughout the process and in the hospital, and any decisions that had to be made, she always turned them over to us. But she's also 17, and we were very aware of that too.
So you have the baby at home, and you get a call, and what happens? Yes.
And so the lawyer had called us a couple of times and said, there's certain paperwork you're going to need to sign, and then we have to submit this to the court. And we're like, sure, let us know. But then the lawyer calls the day before.
It was a Sunday, I think.
And said she called her lawyer and said she wants the baby back. Do you want to call and talk to her yourselves and see what's going on? What do you want us to do? So still there, it's, even though you have lawyers, it's still kind of in, of course, in our lap and her lap. And so we did call her back and said, what's going on? What's changed? And she would just say, I've decided I want to parent my son. And wouldn't veer from that phrase.
So you didn't, you didn't get really any information from her about it.
No,
meanwhile, you're holding the baby who you thought was yours.
So we called the lawyer back again and say, okay, so she's, this is how the conversation went. And they said, okay, we'll schedule and we'll get back to you. And the next day, it's basically, we had 24 hours. It was the next day at noon. We were gonna, we had to take the baby to the lawyer's office. The lawyer came outside and we had to hand the baby to the lawyer.
Oh my God.
So we didn't even get to see her at that time. You know, like,
again, there were some concerns with the grandmother, the birth, you know, grandmother. So the lawyer was also being protective of us.
But, oh my God.
Yeah.
So you, give the baby to the lawyer and that's it.
That's it.
Did you hear anything after that? Have you heard anything from them?
Well, we're talking small Vermont town, right? I've been a social worker there for almost
I was there 25 years almost.
So we're just downtown.
We're just trying to run
a few days later, not running
long after,
and
run into her.
There they are on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
So, and she's like, "Do you want to see him?" And it's like, "Yeah, of course." You know, so we look in the stroller at him and find out what his new name is.
Oh my God!
Because of course we did the birth certificate.
And they and she changed the name. I mean, you know, oh my God, though. Ow. Like, that would hurt. That would hurt me. I would actually be pissed as well.
Oh, there were so many emotions. And that's part of what of what we did was we ran away from home because we had to get out of that small town. And the, you know, Rebecca had done all these years of social work for that community. And it was just too hard to be in that community, and of which this, you know, young woman was a part of. So, and so we were fortunate enough. We had a little time and the ability to go away from home.
Yeah. Sally Ann had relatives down in Florida. So we went down and visited for a little over a month. We went down and we just, we need a break.
Decompressed, I guess.
Decompressed, yeah.
I mean, you, and lost, then they had a, you lost a baby.
Yeah.
And because we saw them again, like, just what, 4 or 5 days later. Like,
well, we bumped on our into way them to the, twice. It was on our way to the airport. That other time,
that's the second time, that's right. It's just like, no, we just really need to figure out how we're gonna go forward. How are we gonna live in this community?
Yeah, and how are you gonna protect your hearts?
Yeah,
when you keep seeing
heal
this,
your heart,
Yeah, how are you going to heal your hearts when you're going to keep seeing this baby, this child, this person, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you go away, and then where do we go?
And just for fun, let me throw in that Sally Ann had been pumping.
Oh, you induced
so
lactation?
Her milk was just starting to come in as we lost the baby.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. There was that feeling that I had, like in my arms, even like they would just ache.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After I let him go, they would just.
The entire last night, Sally rocked him.
Mm-hmm.
And sang to him. And held him. Because oh my God. What do you do? Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. God. So. Yeah. Where do you go? How do you heal?
Yeah, my aunt and uncle that we visited actually were in the process of selling a pretty new RV, and we were able to figure out how to work from home before it was cool.
Remote early.
Right? Yeah, which is still pretty amazing that we were
able
to
figure that out. It really is that our jobs were so flexible. So we spent the next year, we lived in an RV.
And we wrote.
Uh-huh.
That's where our book started.
Mm-hmm.
Just processing. Part of our healing process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We both write to process and read to process.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking for books and other articles and things, it's just books especially, geez, about adoption and fertility, they always had that goddamn happy ending. Always with a baby at the end. Like mm-hmm. all the books that we found, at least at that time.
At that time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'll add podcasts as well. Same, like our shows usually end up with a baby, our episodes.
Yeah.
Right?
Which isn't helpful when you just got a baby ripped from you, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And deciding whether to continue to go on.
Mm-hmm.
We needed space and time to grieve and sort and figure out what is the next step. And now I am 50.
Right.
So like, do I keep doing this?
Right. Yeah. You were like, do I really want a child graduating from
high school
when I'm almost 70 or
more than 70? Mm-hmm. Like, how much longer and what path do we take now that this has happened?
Mm-hmm.
We don't even trust adoption. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we were so worried about this happening in foster care, and then it happened in a private adoption. Mm-hmm. And so what do we do? And surrogacy was really out of reach. I mean, that's
$100,000 to start. Yeah,
exactly.
So what's the conversation? How do you come to where you come?
I think it was really ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the writing was really helpful for us. We would, because, grief is individual and we would be in very different places.
Yeah. Like one day I might be so angry. I just want to go throw sticks in a river or rocks at the wall or something.
Yeah,
I'm so
that
angry.
Sounds more like and it. That sounds more like it.
Yeah.
Like a rocks at a wall than sticks
rocks
in a river.
Rocks at a wall.
Like in a wall. Exactly.
Yeah. Something. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And that same day, Sally Ann might be in complete denial and thinking the birth mother's going to call us back. She's going to completely change her mind. You know, she's going to be in this. So you're like doing all these different things up and down. And so we would write, and often, it'd be like 2-3 in the morning. You wake up and you've had enough sleep that your brain is active and thinking about, damn, I should have seen that this wasn't going to work or whatever you're ruminating on.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's the worst time to think. The worst time to think
totally.
Sometimes you just can't get back to sleep. So we found that if we'd write, just get up and write for half an hour, get it out, just barf, puke on paper, as I would call it. You know, just and so then the next morning, often it was so funny because I'd wake up and say, "Oh my God, I was writing from like 2 to 3," and she's like, "No way, I was writing from 3:30 to 4." Then we would read to each other what we wrote.
Mm.
And it was very bonding and very helpful in just knowing, oh my God,
that's where you are.
That's where you are right now. Like, you're thinking about being a 15-year-old vulnerable queer person today and how lonely that was. And that's the space you're in. And because the grief touches all the grief, it just weaves, it just pulls it all up to the forefront.
Yes.
So we learn new things about each other
in
this process. We just connect. Yeah. I know a lot of people have said, how did you live together in a 24-foot RV for a year without killing each other? It was the best thing for us because we didn't want to be far apart. Like, we wanted to be holding each other anytime we could.
Wow.
Yeah, we were able to put a lot of, I think, nurturing and nourishing energy into each other at that time, too, which, you know. And at the same time, there were times when I think we were very in our own bubbles, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And are you at peace now with this? Are you, you're not going forward with having babies anymore?
No, we are not going forward with having babies anymore. And that's a decision I think we made several years ago. But I do feel like our book became a baby of sorts for us too.
I can feel you there. I get it. This podcast is that baby that I worked so hard to make. I totally get it.
Yes.
Yeah. And would you say you're at peace?
Yeah, I would say I am at peace. It's, I can't say that I don't ever see a little stuffed lammy or something. It's one of the things we had in the nursery that we prepared without feeling a tug, without feeling having tears. Does that ever go away? I don't know. It's just part of being alive and dealing with the bumps and stuff that, you know, part of the journey. But do I feel like I need to have an infant in the house anymore? No. I guess I'm at peace with the decision not to have a baby in our house.
Yeah, I think that's how I would answer that. I mean, I don't know. Peace is a tough
It's a tough word.
It's a very good question. Yeah. I think that I've come to a place of accepting like that this is my life. And I have a lot of gratitude for what I have in my life and the people I have in my life, certainly Rebecca. And I think I've come to a place of just forgiving myself for not being able to make that baby happen or make that baby happen in a way that I envisioned. Because I think that was the big piece for me too. I felt a lot of shame that then, and we talk about the grief and the reconnection to those other parts of our life. And I really carried a lot of that early shame, the shame of being queer, all of those, like, you know, there's something wrong with me, I'm broken. And a lot of that came up and throughout the process. But I feel like that became even more amplified after we lost the baby.
Yes.
And so I feel like I've come to a better self-acceptance and self-forgiveness, which is
good.
Yeah.
Which is good. And you're both following your passions, which is also good.
And I think the book, it feels really good to, when we, whenever we do readings or Q&As, book signings, whatever, there's always people tell us their story.
Yeah.
And how grateful they are that we put, and that was the purpose. Like, we just, when we decided, okay, we got to take all these thousand pages of writing that we've done and somehow put it together into something that we can share, because other people need to know you're not alone or broken or whatever you feel. You know, there are people out there who struggle with the same thing, and we are wonderful whole human beings, and love makes a family, whatever that family looks like.
I agreed 100%. And I think that you telling your story today is going to help some listeners at home, and is probably helping some listeners right now. So I really am so grateful for you coming on and sharing this. And your book, I'm holding it up for those who are watching the video. It's called Uncertain Fruit. It's beautifully written. It's a great book. It's a page turner. So everybody should go pick it up. Can you tell everyone where they can find it and where they can find you if you're in the social media world and all this stuff?
Sure. We have a website, majoyawriting.com, and we're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. I think our handles are just Majoya Writing. The book is available directly through Rootstock Publishing, but it's also available through any place that you can find a book. It's distributed by Ingram Publishing and Baker & Taylor, so you can get it online. You can get it in ebook form.
Kindle.
Okay. I love it. Yes. Okay. Everybody get out there, get the book, support this queer community, especially those who are doing their best to make the world a better place. And I'm so very grateful that you came on and shared this story, this beautiful story. I wish you all the best in the world.
Thank you, Jamie. Thank you for having us. It really means a lot.
Of course. Well, folks, I really hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I did. What a good story. But the conversation is not over, folks. Be sure you're following the show on all the socials. We're on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at the Queer Family Podcast. You're going to get photos of all the guests there, some videos, and just, you know, all around fun from yours truly. Who doesn't want that? Don't miss out. You don't want FOMO. Nobody wants FOMO. And don't forget to join me on Patreon to help me create this super important queer content. You're going to head to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast to sign up and get that bonus content. And one more thing, if you love this show and want to represent your love for us and our beautiful families, you need to head to our shop and get some Queer Family Podcast merchandise. We've got so many designs, and you can put these designs on any product in the store. We've got t-shirts, mugs, hoodies, notebooks, face masks, laptop cases. You're just going to go to tpublic.com and search for the Queer Family Podcast. Or you can find our store at link in bio on our Instagram page. Or you can find us on our, you can find the shop. Or you can find the shop on our website at thequeerfamilypodcast.com. There's so many ways, so many ways. Well, folks, I have you. Well, all right, folks, that's it for this week. Tune back in next week for another episode all about family, but with gay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.